Blog Talk Radio.
The following show is a proud member of the ShowDoc Network. Learn more about this show and other great shows by logging on to ShowDoc.com.
Welcome to System Showdown with Quas and John. Tune in to hear John, a Mac lover, go head-to-head with Quas, a Windows addict, to find out which system makes the grade. Presented by ShowDoc.com.
Time to talk tech. Hello, and welcome to System Showdown on Blog Talk Radio. This is episode 54. For Sunday night, May 16th, 2010. We are coming to you live tonight from Brooklyn and Stony Brook, New York. Thank you for tuning in. I'm John, the Mac guy.
And I'm Quas, the PC guy, and we got a great show for you tonight. In a couple of moments, the Loop's Jim Dalrymple will join us to talk about the saga between Apple and Gizmodo over the story on the stolen iPhone 4G prototype.
You got that right, Quas. During the show, we want to hear from you on the phone lines, as we will be taking your questions when guests are on the air as well. You can call us at a very special number just for you guys, 1-646-478-5187. That's 1-646-478-5187. You will have to press 1 to get into the caller queue, though.
And if you want to, if you prefer to message your queries, you can aim myself at Showdown Quas or my co-host, the iMac guy, at Showdown John. In addition, you can also leave us a voicemail, send us a text during off-show hours by calling or texting us at 315-497-SHOW. That's 315-497-7469. Be sure to text or say System Showdown or SS before your text or call. And so, John, tonight we are talking about an ongoing saga that has swept everywhere from the Twitter sphere to the blogosphere.
You got that right, Quas. As both an Apple and Gizmodo fan, it's definitely hard for me to choose sides here. Right after our interview with Jim, Quas and I will be talking about the iPad's early success and what you could expect from Microsoft's new Kin 1 and Kin 2 phones.
Well, on that note, we would like to welcome on Showdown the Loop's Jim Dalrymple. Jim, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, no problem. I've been looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm, as are we. And, okay, are you ready to start the interview?
Excellent. Let's go.
Let's do this. Before anything else, let's start with this question. What was your initial take on the Apple Gizmodo controversy?
Well, there's lots of different takes on it from a legal standpoint and from a journalist standpoint. I was shocked that Gizmodo actually got a hold of a prototype phone. And like everybody else, I mean, I read the story. That must have gotten millions and millions of page views for them over the first few days even. But I was intrigued.
Yeah, as everybody else was when they first heard about it. And now, how do you think this incident will affect the future relationship between Apple and Gizmodo?
Yeah, I really don't think that there will be a relationship between the two of them. I don't. Regardless of what's going on right now, I mean, if you do something like that with Apple, with other companies it might be different, but with Apple, no, there's not going to be a relationship. I mean, there's the whole legal issues to go through. People are talking about civil action that Apple can take against Gawker Media. Whether Jason Chan is going to be charged with anything, the guy who actually found the phone, whether he'll be charged with anything. I mean, Friday was just a great day, I guess, if you were wrapped up in this whole saga because the court papers were unsealed. So, you know, everybody got a view into what really happened. So that was, it was an interesting day, you know, to find out that the guy who found it, his roommate actually turned him in and, God, it was just crazy.
Mm-hmm, no question. But yeah, like, we want to switch gears a little bit from this whole legal situation to the actual iPhone 4G device that Gizmodo had in their possession. Do you think that the final version of the iPhone 4G will have any differences from the prototype that Gizmodo revealed?
You know, I don't think that it's going to have a whole lot of extra things. I mean, to build a piece of hardware and test it, you know, takes some time. And I think that Apple built what they wanted to for the next release. And, you know, judging from the past 3 years and three releases, they've done something in the summer. So I would expect them to do the same thing again in June or July, release an iPhone. And it's certainly too close now to build something else or to have something else. Clearly, Gray Powell had, you know, one of the prototype phones. So I would say that what you saw in Gizmodo is pretty much what we're going to see at the introduction.
Yeah, and now, of course, this leak was a big news on Twitter. Despite this leak, do you think that the updated iPhone 4G will continue to keep Apple as a leader in the smartphone market? Do you think it will have any effect on it?
Well, I think the effect that they're probably having is right now, you know, in any lost sales of people that were going to go buy an iPhone now. You know, not everybody follows tech as closely as what you guys do and what I do. So, you know, people will go out and buy an iPhone, and if they see that a new brand new design is coming, they may hold off. So, you know, any damage from the Gizmodo story will probably be in sales of the older versions leading up to the introduction. As far as Apple, you know, whether this will help them or hurt them, I don't think it's going to matter, because part of what people get used to in using a device, whether it's a phone or a computer or television, is the interface and how easy it is to use. So I think once iPhone 4.0 comes out and you have this new iPhone hardware, people are going to gravitate to it just like they have with previous versions. I don't think they'll be hurt that much at all.
Well said. But speaking of, though, a more general question, despite all this controversy with the leaked iPhone, which mobile platform do you see as right now as the biggest competitor to the iPhone?
I don't want to sound like, I love the iPhone over anything else, but I don't know that anybody really has the whole integration thing down as well as Apple does with the iPhone. And I think that's what people, including myself, really like about the iPhone platform. It's not just a phone, it's music and it's video, and it's got a tight integration with your computer and the cloud. And nobody else really seems to have that. But if I had to pick one, I would probably say the BlackBerry. You know, I used a BlackBerry for a couple of years before the iPhone came out. I really liked it. I was addicted to it like most people are. And then when I switched to the iPhone, it allowed me to do even more. So I haven't looked back.
Yeah, well, that definitely surprised us a little bit. Both of us kind of thought Android a little bit here, but that's definitely the BlackBerry sure has their contingent, no question about that. We're joined right now by The Loop's Jim Dalrymple right here on System Showdown. Now, of course, this case got a lot more interesting when the San Mateo judge ordered the documents to be unsealed from this case. What did you make of that, and do you think this case can get any more complex than it already has?
I don't think that we've heard everything in this case. I really don't. You know, when the documents were unsealed and we started to hear some of the things that were going on, you know, from the roommate tipping off Apple and the cops, you know, people were making a big deal about Apple spurring on the police to start an investigation. Well, you really can't blame them for that. I mean, they had a piece of prototype hardware that in their eyes was stolen. And sold to a media company. So, of course, they're going to sit down with the DA or the police and, you know, make out a complaint against that. I think any other company would have done the exact same thing. I do think that there's more here that we don't know about that we're going to be surprised with when it comes up, especially with the charges and what charges they can lay against all of these people.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. One side note I actually want to mention about these documents that are unsealed, if you actually read through them, by the way, I recommend it. It's a very interesting read if you're into this whole case. There's tons of immense detailed personal information about these people, which in my mind is just crazy. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. It does seem kind of crazy that, I mean, even people's height and weight. I mean, it's just the level of detail. But I guess, you know, when it comes down to the legal stuff, you have to have all of this stuff. I just, yeah, there's a lot in there. You know, I was more interested in just the from the legal standpoint, how they got the warrant and, you know, things that they were doing to find this out. But even when the guy who found the phone, when he first came out and said, yes, it was me in the Wired story, and, you know, he sounded pretty innocent in the whole thing. But when you read some of the documents and, you know, he said that about Gray Powell losing his phone, his roommates tried to get him to turn it in, and he said, sucks for him. You know, you kind of get a different view on this guy. You know, he made it sound like he was trying his best to get the phone back, and, you know, maybe he didn't try so hard after all.
Hmm. Well put. But yeah, to switch gears a little bit, we want to know, like, if this was a huge controversy for the tech news world, obviously. With in the documents, you can see there's actually a bidding war between Gizmodo and Gadget and PC World for this device. We want to know, though, do you think that Apple should have a say in what these kinds of news organizations like Gizmodo post about them before the public reads it?
No. No, you can't. You can't do that. I mean, you know, in the whole news world, we all look for the big scoop. I guess the question with this one is, you know, did Gizmodo break any laws by paying for the phone and, you know, whatever else happened in this whole situation that we probably don't know about yet? But no, I mean, you know, we're free to write what we want. Any shield laws that are out there for journalists don't protect the journalists and give them the right to break the law. And that's what has to be determined if Gizmodo did.
Right now on System Showdown, we're joined by The Loop's Jim Dalrymple. And, of course, since this leak, there have been other iPhone leaks and even unreleased MacBook in Vietnam, of all places. Is this incident any indication that Apple's era of secrecy may be coming to an end?
Well, you got to wonder what happened there, don't you? I mean, all of a sudden there's a MacBook and another iPhone 4G that, according to them, a Vietnam businessman bought for $4,000 while in the U.S. buying an iPad. Where did that come from? You know, there's so many questions around that, you know, can you just go to a corner store now and pick up a prototype iPhone and, you know, fly home with it? It all seems kind of crazy. To be perfectly honest, I wondered whether that was a fake or not, but by looking at the pictures and everything inside, it appears to be real. I don't know what's going on over at Apple and if this one actually is a real prototype, but if it is, then, you know, they have some serious issues.
Oh, most certainly. Like, I could actually see the way Apple's going with busting down people's doors to avenge their product. It could be Vietnam War 2 out there. Mm-mm. But, yes. terrible, I know. But, yes, new question. Apple is clearly worried about leaking their products before their release dates. In all honesty, how much do you think that these leaks affect their sales?
At a late date like this, you know, with the stuff coming in, say, June, July, maybe. I think where the leak came out in April, there is some damage to the sales. If it was, you know, a week beforehand, then I would say there probably isn't going to be a whole lot of effect on that. But, you know, you're talking maybe, well, in sales-wise, almost a whole quarter from the time that it was leaked to the time that it would be released. So that's quite a bit of time to lose in iPhone sales. Whether they actually did or not, we'll have to wait until the quarterly report to find out. But I think that the longer time that there is between the release and the leak, certainly the bigger the effect on Apple.
And once again, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. You've certainly answered all of our questions masterfully tonight. We always ask our guests to make a little bit of a prediction. And in this instance, I think you kind of already answered it, but how do you think this controversy will be resolved? And are you going to stick by what you said earlier and that Gizmodo won't be able to repair the relationship with Apple here?
Yeah, there'll be no repairing of that relationship. I just can't see that happening at all. You know, these days I think saying Gizmodo on Apple's campus is like yelling bomb in an airport. You know, it's just not going to work. But I think ultimately the iPhone's going to be successful, you know, despite the story and if there are any hurt sales in between.
Well said. Yeah, like, thank you once again for answering these questions. That's the last of it. You did a very good job, by the way. We have a guest on here, and you, by far, were excellent. But before we let you go... no problem. It was our pleasure. Before we let you go, though, tell our listeners where they can find you and The Loop online and on Twitter. Go ahead and plug yourself. It's now your time.
Well, you can find me online at Loop Insight, INSIGHT.com, and on Twitter, J Dalrymple, JDALRYMPLE, and I'm at both places. If you go to the website, there's a link to the Twitter feed right there.
Great, great. Well, that's all the questions prepared for tonight. Once again, thank you for coming on, and we hope to speak again with you sometime down the line.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And, of course, was Jim Dalrymple of The Loop. And if you want to stay in The Loop, you better check out his blog over
certainly.
loopinsight.com. Great stuff from him, John. I hope that at least this conflict will be resolved. If not, again, like he said, and I probably agree with this, that Apple and Gizmodo are going to have a little bit of a cold war for a while.
Oh, yeah, no question. But let's just be honest here. One thing which I wanted to bring up real quickly is that even before this, the relationship between Apple and Gizmodo wasn't too good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the main reasons that Gizmodo decided to do this to Apple, knowing that it would lower their sales, was because Apple PR, you know, Apple Public Relations, was treating Gizmodo so badly compared to, say, David Pogue or Walt Mossberg for the Wall Street Journal, you know?
Oh, like they were giving them the cold shoulder, and like the New York Times wasn't getting the New York Times has gotten the cold shoulder from Apple a lot.
That's, here's the thing, though. Apple PR is a lot more receptive to like, I know I'm going to regret my words right here, but the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, these are reputable news organizations.
It's more than a reputable news organization.
But that's the thing, though. In Apple's eyes, they aren't. Sites like Gizmodo, Engadget, PC World, these sites, they don't see them as, you know, reputable as the New York Times.
All Gizmodo and Engadget have done for Apple is help their sales. That's all they've done.
But then again,
review their products.
Well, instead, like, they review them, and then they take...
Apple's not going to expect every edition of PC World, every edition of Macworld to be favorable. They're going to, you know, just like the federal government, you know, Apple has to be subjected to some criticism.
Well, I could understand that, but still, like, when Gizmodo does something like this out of spite for Apple, saying, oh, we know that it's unethical to take this device and show it to the entire world 6 months before it's released. We're going to do it anyway, despite Apple PR for giving us the controller. That's exactly what they did. If you look in the affidavit, there's actually an email from Jason Chen to Steve Jobs that says exactly this, which I just find fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, our show right now is a System Showdown. Our show should be renamed tonight to Company Showdown or something like that.
Oh, yeah, no question.
It's getting heated, and Microsoft is kind of, I think Microsoft is starting to take advantage of this somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me of an old joke, which I actually read on David Polk's Twitter, of all places. Bill Gates left Microsoft's new Kin phone in a bar. It's still there.
That's very offensive. I take offense to that.
Oh, but think of it this way, though. It's true in a way. If people said, oh, we have the new Kin, you know, nobody's going to care.
Well, now all of a sudden, this is becoming, what is the Jimmy Kimmel Show called? This is becoming a new euphemism.
Mm-hmm, most certainly.
This is becoming a new saying.
It is. You know, a guy walks into a bar and loses an iPhone. That's exactly what it was.
This has replaced a guy walking to a bar. Ouch.
Yeah, that's the new thing now. A guy walks into a bar and drops his iPhone, and then it gets sold to Gizmodo for $5,000. That's the new joke.
and gadget and PC roll along with PC to it. I have to think that Apple is going to be, gadget and PC world also are going to be in a little bit of trouble here now. Even though they lost the bidding war, they were still involved. That was not good on their part, you know?
Oh, yeah, most certainly, especially since they're actually mentioned by name in the affidavit. If you look
This affidavit doesn't make you guess anything. They put everything right out there.
Mm-hmm. Most certainly. You know, like, if you actually read through this, it's like a 20-page document, including the appendices.
First of all, it's a public record. And,
mm-hmm.
That's the whole deal here. But the fact
Freedom of Information Act, baby. Freedom of Information.
But the fact that it's so open like this is just, I mean, you think, all right, this is all right, but right now, this guy is going to have to move.
Oh,
I mean,
they put a cell phone number in here, too. Hey, you want to give the guy a call? 650-454-0557. That's his phone number. It's literally in the affidavit.
Oh, my goodness. Now you have to hear voicemail
They put his driver's license number. They put in pretty much everything about this guy. It's crazy. His address. He also drives a black VW Jetta with the license plate 5CSB531.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. A couple of big stories. First of all, there was a little bit of a tragedy in the music world this weekend. Would you like to elaborate on that, John?
Oh, yeah. What of it? I'm curious. What are we talking about?
A tragedy in the music world, a death.
Oh, yes, that's right, a tragedy in the music world as of today. We are saddened to announce that, well, it's not really an announcement. It's been known for about, a day now, but it's still sad to say the least.
Something on Twitter, obviously.
Oh, of course. But we should just pay our respects. The rocker known as Dio, full name Ronnie James Dio, born July 10, 1942, member of the bands Elk, Rainbow, Black Sabbath, and his own band, Dio, has passed away today at the age of 67. We are quite saddened here at System Showdown by this news.
Do we know the cause of his passing?
The what now?
The cause of his passing.
That's a good question, actually. I'm looking on Wikipedia right now. Stomach cancer. Here we go. Yeah, he died of stomach cancer. How sad. And this guy was a rocker, no question. Have you heard some of his songs?
This is Black Sabbath, right?
Yeah, he was in Black Sabbath. He had his own band, Dio.
Yeah. They were one of the, they kind of started a revolution.
Oh, no question. And, if you gotta go, you gotta go. The guy lived to the ripe old age of 67. He left this world with some of the best songs out there. My favorite is Holy Diver. I love that song, Holy Diver. That's a great song. Also,
yeah.
Next
time I'll have to try singing it, buddy.
Holy Diver. All right, love it. That's actually how he sounded. He listened to his voice. He had a really high voice. You know, it was great, though.
I'm going to call in to talk to John and myself. A couple of topics on tap. We already got into the saga between Apple and Gizmodo. You can also talk to us about the iPad. Do you have the iPad? What do you like about the iPad? What don't you like so much about the iPad? And also, has anyone seen this new Microsoft Kin 1 and Kin 2 phone? Definitely want to talk to you about that. Microsoft is trying to create this social advocate kind of phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get into that. Number is 1-646-478-5187. And, John, I believe people can also leave us a voicemail during off-show hours.
Oh, you bet. If you miss us, you hear this on the archive, for example, and you're like, man, I want to talk to those guys and tell them how I feel. Don't worry about it. Just because you missed the slide doesn't mean you can't talk to us. Go ahead and send us a text or call us at our very special number, 315-497-SHOW. That's 315-497-7469. Be sure to text or say System Showdown or double S before that text or call so we know it's for us.
Mm-hmm. Great point there. Mm-hmm. And also be sure to check out our guest tonight, to stay in the loop. It's over at loopinsight.com. Great stuff from him. He's a former Macworld writer. Now he's more of a freelancer. He also works for CNET, which is a subdivision of CBS. So definitely check him out over at loopinsight.com. Great stuff from him tonight. John, let's get to our next topic here. And we're going to skip before we go into our written topics. This is just over the wire right now. This is a hot new topic. Steve Jobs in a feud with a Gawker Media guy. This is getting pretty heated right now. And even it's even getting kind of vulgar as well, not on Steve Jobs' part, on the other guy's part. Steve Jobs is being more diplomatic here, I guess, if you want to say then. But even Steve Jobs is getting very terse here. And he's known for responding, the CEO of Apple, but and also of Pixar, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah, he's the CEO of Apple, CEO of Pixar. He's also the CEO of Next Computer, which he founded on his own and was sold to Apple in 97.
Yeah. But Steve Jobs, let me just give you a little sense of what he said. The last one in this email, I guess you can call it email trend, and this is all public record now, apparently. The last 2:20 a.m., I guess this is Pacific time, so it'll be 5:20 a.m. Eastern time.
I don't know about that. I think it might be 2:20 Eastern time because this was received by the guy in New York and Steve's in California.
It'd be 11:20 p.m.
Yep.
So it'd be after Shabbat. So Steve Jobs observed the Sabbath. It's very nice to hear.
His name is Steve Jobs, Steve. Not many people know that.
What's his name?
Steve Jobs, Steve.
Steve Jobs team, yeah, exactly.
That's a joke.
Anyway, one of the last things he said in regard to this, I guess this issue of freedom of speech, or really something else, but he says, Steve Jobs writes, "You are so misinformed. No one kicked in any doors. You're believing a lot of erroneous blog reports." That gives you a good sense here of what's going on. It's basically blogging versus a big corporate computer company.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it was in general, you know, like with this whole thing that we were just talking about before, the lost iPhone. It was a blogging, like a blog versus a multinational corporation. And now this has come down to a blogger.
All of a sudden, a decade after this, after the internet got big, we're starting to see some of the ramifications and some nightmares here.
Well, yeah, well, let's just be honest here, though. You know, Apple has a lot of odds to play at this point. You know, before, like, with the whole lost iPhone and the whole debacle, like the public debacle with Adobe, you know, tensions are running high at Apple. And I really wouldn't put it past Steve for him to be really stressed out about all this and take it out on a reporter.
Yeah, and it seems that it's really getting heated here. And, you know, this kind of is kind of a two-faced. I don't know if you see this, John. And I've been against Apple for a long time, and you've kind of shown me the door a little sometimes in an appropriate manner. But but to me, what happened here right now with Steve Jobs is that, you know how sometimes Apple gets contacted about certain things and they say no comment? And now all of a sudden, Steve Jobs is commenting on things, and, you know, it just tells me, so Steve Jobs, when he gets email, he has a very big selective perception of what he's going to respond to. He has to be, in his stature. But, I mean, all of a sudden, do you think from this now that we're going to be more vocal, we're going to actually start responding to a lot of things that they didn't respond to in the past?
I don't know about that. If anything, I think they're going to clam up a bit because, you know, I'm not going to lie, this does look pretty bad, you know, having this kind of communication.
Steve Jobs is basically having a temper tantrum right now.
Not necessarily. Like, if you actually, like, this
like the guy, is, the guy is the guy's a little more violent now in his wording here.
Yeah, the blogger definitely started. It's not like Steve went and emailed this blogger and say, oh, you know, you're a jerk or something like that. This guy went and the first email he sent was, you know, if Dylan was 20 today, how would you feel about your company? I assume referring to Bob Dylan. And, like, he's criticizing his company and his work. Why, like, would you think, like, this iPad is a revolution? You know, so this
the guy responded, and then all of a sudden he got into this whole ad, right?
Well, yeah. Like, here's the thing, you know, like the reason why the blogger got so angry because he saw like the new iPad ad on television. Have you seen this ad? It's actually a pretty good ad.
Wow, Steve Jobs responded in 3 hours. That's incredible.
Like, I mean, it's like, yeah, that's pretty good for him. I'm not gonna lie, but you know. Like, one thing which might actually put a damper on this is that I heard this actually isn't Steve Jobs' email account. You know, but here's the thing, you know, SJobs at Apple.com. Hear me out. Like,
Ryan
SJobs.
Tate.
What?
Yeah, you go. Sorry, I'm listening. We're interrupting, Joe. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Hear me out. Like, here's the thing. SJobs at Apple.com may not be controlled by Steve Jobs himself.
Really?
I hear that maybe he has like a personal assistant write these emails for him, or may not come directly from him. Like, could you see Steve Jobs sitting at his Mac and typing this out?
Oh, so maybe it's not it's Steve Jobs.
Like, I do think it's coming from Apple, no question. It's coming from somebody inside Apple. But I don't know if it's literally, you know, Steve himself.
I guess some of the typing looks like it wouldn't be some Steve.
Like, I don't know. Like, we don't know how Steve types. For all we know, all those emails he sent out before could have been his assistant or something.
Well, Steve Jobs is getting... So, but the bottom line is, it's somebody responding here.
Well, I'll admit, the response is pretty interesting, though. If you actually look into it, listen to some of the remarks that Steve makes, you know, freedom from programs that steal your private data, freedom from porn, freedom, you know, because that's one of the big things.
Could it be that some of the responses were from Steve and some of them weren't?
Could be. It could be just different people for each one. You never know. But we know for a fact that these all did come from Apple.
Yeah, so bottom line is Apple's talking here.
Yeah, but here's the interesting thing, though. He didn't identify himself as a member of the media when he sent his initial email. Later on, as he goes, he starts to say, you know, hey, I work for Gawker, you know.
And he works for the new houses.
The new houses?
He works for the new houses.
They call it that now, the new houses?
Well, no, not anymore. But the new houses basically... S.I. Newhouse, Donald Newhouse, it's a big company owning a lot of magazines.
Like, how crazy is that, that a guy who does news is named Newhouse?
Yeah. I've heard this enough times when I'm in Syracuse.
That's funny, though. Yeah. That's like, to quote Seinfeld, that's like an ice cream man that's named Cone.
And it's like a guy who owns a boat named, what was his name?
Whose name?
The boat that Kramer was on. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Ass Man. Yeah, talk about Ass Man. That,
that
a good Seinfeld reference. But like, yeah, while we're into Seinfeld references, the reason I bring this up, there's a librarian named Bookman.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah, we're full of jokes tonight. But yeah, point of the matter being, back to the topic at hand. What do you think about this, though? Who do you think is right in this?
I gotta think it's Steve. Well, whoever's writing this, Steve Jobs trusts them to respond.
I suppose, but... You know, like, point of the matter, though, no matter...
It can only be one of two things. It can only be someone Steve Jobs trusts, Steve himself, or, God forbid, a hacker.
Or it could just be, you know, like, the person who runs Apple's mail servers was bored one night and was like, whatever, I'll pretend to be Steve Jobs.
It was you!
Yes, it wasn't me. You have foiled my evil plan. Wait, why would I hack Apple servers? At most, I'd make phony emails from Bill Gates and Microsoft.
Do you have any inside information on this? Call us, 1-646-478-5187.
Yeah, but quick question, though. What do you think about this? Like, who do you think is correct on the matter? Do you think Ryan is right for saying that, you know, Apple isn't revolutionary because they lock down their products? Or do you think that Steve is right by saying that they should lock out things like Flash and porn and programs that, you know, wear down your battery and steal your data?
So basically he's annoyed about the censorship.
Yeah, well, pretty much the lockdown of Apple's App Store. That's the problem, you know? If you can't get your app into the App Store with Apple approving it, then you can't run your app on your iPhone. That's the problem. I don't think it's a problem. I'm not going to lie. I said it. I'm critical of Apple. I think that the App Store is a gigantic problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it's going to end well.
Like, it's not. But what do you think about this, though? Do you think that the Apple Store, do you think that the App Store should continue to reject apps, or do you think that they should just let people install what they want on their devices?
I think you need to maintain some sort of discretion when evaluating whether an app should be in the marketplace or not. And I think Apple should have that control.
Mm-hmm. As do I. But the main question is, do you think that Apple should stop people from running programs on their own and distributing them outside the App Store?
You know, that sounds very similar to me, like a bootleg movie.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
That's what it is, right? I think there should be laws against it. I think Apple has to sit down with Congress and make some laws.
Laws against what?
Against this. Are there laws against bootleg?
Well, it's not bootlegging. That's the thing, you know? Like, there are... Like, people get confused between the two different schools of running unauthorized code on your Apple iDevice. There is piracy, which is what you're talking about, where people take apps that people build and sell, and then they get them for free on their devices. And then there's other applications that Apple simply doesn't want to approve for sale in the App Store, and then those get sold or distributed elsewhere.
Okay.
It's a really complicated issue, I'm not going to lie. You're right in one part. This isn't going to be resolved anytime soon.
Yeah, it's just like ugly, and, you know, I think at some point we're going to need some sort of mediator here.
Oh, definitely. But who's it going to be, though? Who do you think it could be?
I think it's got to be someone in the government to take care of this.
I think of the FTC, because they're actually, like, Adobe, for example.
The FTC? Are you talking about the Federal Trade Commission?
Yeah, because this is trade, right? Because, like, what Adobe's trying to do is they're trying to get the government involved again on Apple for not letting Flash on the iDevices by saying it's antitrust.
Yeah. That's
yeah, I can see the ignorant on the government terms, but that's what they're saying, I think. They're going to sue them for antitrust.
Like, yeah. Anyway, John, but we can say so much about this that would go on and on. And hopefully, for the sake of like us and blog talkers and people who have used internet as a source of communication, hopefully this will get resolved. I mean, Apple does have a stake in the internet as well, and they should realize that there's going to be people out there who have an opinion about what they're doing and who don't disagree with them. And Apple has to kind of evaluate things before they go on these rants like Steve Jobs is going on right now.
Most certainly.
You actually agree with me. That's a good thing. We're going to move on to the iPad here. iPad's early success, and what a success it's been. I think I'm not sure how many iPads are on that counter website right now, but the iPad has far exceeded expectations. It had high expectations, and it kind of well exceeded that. The iPad's been even more popular than when the iPhone, and the it's not as revolutionary as the iPhone, I would say, but it's exceeded iPhone, iPad. First of all, when the iPod came out, people were trying to figure out what the hell it is, and it was the first of the eyes, and so you can't really get too much on the iPod not having as much success as the other two things already had, because people. Also, remember during that phase, people were still into their MP3 players and their Walkmans and those devices. So once people saw the success that the iPod and the iPhone had, it was inevitable that the iPad would have the same kind of success, even more than those two did. And John, do you think it's premature? Do you think it's going to die down? We have a lot of competitors that may come out. We had a couple of false competitors from HP. Now HP bought, of course, they bought Palm, and that should be fun to watch. But it's been a good ride so far for that little iPad.
Well, here's what I honestly think. I think that Apple is doing a great job, you know, selling and distributing the iPad because, you know, they got the marketing down, they have the demand down, and I'm pretty sure they sold over a million of these devices by now, especially with the launch of the iPad Wi-Fi and the iPad 3G. And I honestly think Apple is doing a great job with the marketing of this because with the reviews, people love this thing.
Yeah, that's good. But let me talk about marketing for a second. I mean, I know this is probably something very small, but I was always thinking about this when I think about as using a product name. Because, like, you know, I is how we refer to ourselves here, how each individual refers to themselves here in the United States. But you go across to other countries where English is not the official language, and there's a different word for I. Like, in Spain, for instance, they got to call the Yopad. Right? Or the Yopad?
Yeah, pretty funny.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
pretty
so
funny,
other countries are buying the iPad, and, you know, Apple's marketing, of course, as the iPad of other countries, but do other countries really get it? That's what I always kind of wondered.
Well, if you actually want to know the history of Apple's naming structure, the thing is, I doesn't refer to I as in me. The I in iPad and iPod and iMac, those all refer to internet.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out, but
but that's the thing, though, you know? Like, Apple tried to actually take it a step further by using the E, like for eMac. That didn't go so well, though. E was for education.
No, that doesn't sound so great.
Yeah,
it's not like e-machines, but then I start to vomit when I hear about that.
Oh, yeah, like, it didn't sell too well. I'm not going to lie. The eMac wasn't a good seller.
No, neither was e-machines, but one thing about you know, the iPad, and yeah, I mean, so they're obviously marketing in these foreign countries. Anyway, back to what we were saying.
I just want to mention real quick, though. Like, you're actually, I find it interesting you're criticizing the first part of the name iPad. Most people are really critical on the second part.
Oh, yeah, well, like, I think we discussed that in great length in our show already. But
Probably, for
a lot of reasons. I get it, it's a notepad. You don't have to go any further, all right?
Well, it's not really like, it's not that it's a notepad. It's that, you know, the term pad literally means, you know, a slate, something that you could hold, you know? That's what it is. And it somehow became, you know, synonymous with feminine hygiene products. I'm not quite sure for that.
Yes. And you first, when I first told it to you, you kind of shrugged it off. Now you're starting to get it.
Well, I understood it, but here's the thing, though, you know, as soon as people, when Apple announced it, people heard it. They're like, hey, iPad, I get it, it's funny. But, you know, here's the thing, you know, products that have these kind of names, you hear it the first time, you think, oh, that's funny. And then from there, you actually realize that behind.
Yeah, I wonder, where's the lawsuit from Mad TV?
Well, Mad TV actually stopped producing shows before the iPad was announced, so they can't technically sue.
Smart move. Of course, there were a couple of other places that were trying to get a patent for the iPad, and Apple was trying to sneak their way in here.
Mm-hmm. Like, interesting thing about the iPad trademark, Apple actually used a dummy company to register the name iPad, like a dummy company in Delaware, to make it stand for something different.
Mm-hmm. Actually, before we move on to the Microsoft kin here, there's a new term that's being used in conjunction with the iPad. I don't know if you heard of this term. It's called a mode of computing where choice is constrained to deliver less complex and more relevant experiences, which is a curated computing. Basically, less choice, more relevance. And that's what people are saying with the iPad, is that it's giving you less choice once you buy the official product, but it's more relevant to what you're going to actually need a computing device for.
Oh, man, that's true, you know, because people are saying about the iPad that, oh, it can't do multitask, it can't run Flash, it can't, you know, run unauthorized programs. You know, it can't run a full operating system like Windows or OS X. But people don't want that, though. People just want a device that does what it needs to do. If you want to browse the web or check your email or watch a video, this is your go-to device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically this consumer product blog that spoke about this new type of computing or this standard that iPad is setting says that other type of devices like that will run on Android or Windows 7 will not be able to follow the same footsteps here in terms of, you know, giving you the apps that you're going to use more. It's kind of now the internet's getting more organized. I think we're starting to see that more websites are used more than others. And even though we have this theory of net neutrality, which we've talked about ad nauseum on our show, it seems like Apple is trying to consolidate that a little bit here.
Most certainly.
Yep. Let's talk about, before we go off topic again, let's talk about our next topic here, which I don't know how exciting this news is, but it's the Microsoft Kin 1 and the Kin 2. So Microsoft is already getting ahead of themselves here, releasing two phones at once. Seeing from a lot of tech reviews that people are calling this a social aggregator. I guess you were talking about
a social alligator? Did I hear that right?
Well, it's not in Australia. A social aggregator.
A social alligator? Wait, so it's like an alligator who goes to parties, man, or something like that? Hey, how you doing? I'm an alligator. I like this already. I want an alligator phone.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Social alligator, gotcha. I like it already. That's what it sounds like.
It's basically something you can chomp on.
I like it.
Yeah, anyway,
okay, so what does this social alligator do?
Well, it's One thing about this Kin 2 is that it's the interface of this Kin is basically a social network aggregator.
Social network alligator, gotcha. What does it do?
It gives you all your apps.
Okay.
You have the ability to sync your Zune and Kin Studio, if you have that.
Wait,
with it.
Who has a Zune though?
It's basically the thing of it. It's kind of like a kind of like round, squarish kind of display board. You have your basic keyboard. It might become looks like a BlackBerry kind of. It looks like a mix between like a BlackBerry and a Sidekick.
Like, in all honesty, it reminds me a lot of the Palm Pre.
Yeah, it does. A little bit. Not really.
I don't know. I think it looks like the Palm Pre. At least the Kin 1.
Basically, it's very efficient at managing all your social networks in one place, which is something that I don't know if you can do on your iPad.
Like what? Like, what can't, like, tell me, like, I just want to know straight up. I'm sick of hearing, you know, the fluff. Why is this better than iPhone?
It's not.
Wow, that was easier than I thought.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying what you can expect from it.
All right. I can understand that. But, like, how about this? Why does Microsoft think that's going to be better than an iPhone? Why does Microsoft think that people are going to buy this thing?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like Microsoft's really marketing this as like the next big thing. They're just trying to poke their noses in it, if you catch my drift.
Perhaps. I could understand that.
I think Microsoft kind of realizes they can't compete with the iPhone at this point in time.
I suppose. But here's the thing, though. You know, Microsoft could have had a chance to compete with the iPhone had they introduced an actual phone, you know, 3 years ago. They having the same problem they have with the Zune.
It's a great point there. And something you just mentioned about, looks like a Palm Pre. I don't know if you've read this somewhere, but this website, mobileburn.com, actually said exactly that. They said that the interface of this thing or the design of it reminds them of the screen on the Palm Pre.
Mm-hmm. Well, I honestly think that. It looks a lot like a Palm, if you really look at it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like,
well, Palm just joined HP, so they can't talk that much about this.
Well, here's the thing. I'm actually expecting HP to introduce, you know, new phones based on this Palm acquisition. I'm telling you.
So you were making a prediction on our show tonight.
Most certainly. I'm going to make a prediction that with Palm underneath HP, HP is going to become a major player in the cell phone market and direct competitor to the iPhone and the Kin. That's my prediction.
Mm-hmm. Great point. You want to call in the last 5 minutes to go here? You can talk to John and myself, the iMac guy over there in his Apple Majesty.
Got it.
Six, six,
my
four, six,
Apple IT Tower.
Your iTower. 646.
iTower.
478-5187. You can also follow us on Twitter. Hopefully you'll follow us in the next couple of weeks because you may become our 100th follower. We're close to the big triple digits. We'll have to come up with some sort of prize for you if you do that. That's twitter.com/showdown. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/systemshowdown. Definitely stay tuned with us. Tech news, especially it feels like in the spring and summer months, is when the tech world really starts to heat up. And it's really getting heated up now, literally, with all the Vietnam Wars going on. But
Vietnam Wars.
We'll see what happens.
It's going to be interesting to see what does happen with all this, because this is pretty crazy. Things are getting really heated between
Yeah, and also,
Apple
one thing interesting about the Kin, it's going to be launched on Verizon Wireless.
That's interesting. I don't know why Apple, like, I don't know why Microsoft did that. You know, Verizon of all carriers?
Yeah, I mean, you would think maybe Sprint, right?
Well, here's the thing. Sprint already has Palm. Palm is loyal to Sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Like, here's what you can break it down like this. AT&T has iPhone. T-Mobile has Android. Verizon has BlackBerry.
Uh-huh.
Sprint has Tom.
Yep.
So I really don't know why Microsoft decided to go with Verizon. They're competing directly at BlackBerry.
Uh-huh.
In all honesty, if you're at the Verizon store and you see a Microsoft Kin and a BlackBerry side by side, which one are you going to pick?
All right. BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's what's going to be in most people's minds. People are going to see Kin, and they're like, oh, what's a Kin? I'd rather get what I know. I'd rather get BlackBerry.
Great point. John, so I guess I'll ask you here, boom or bust, Microsoft Kin. One and two.
I don't know. Like, it's too early to tell. The thing hasn't even been released yet.
Okay, how about this? Factor Friction, somebody will buy it.
I believe, like, the same people who bought the Zune are going to buy this thing. That's what I think is going to happen.
So the same email people.
Exactly. You know, the same 10 people who bought the Zune are going to buy this phone.
Yeah, well, hopefully Microsoft will spice up their social slant on this thing, and we'll see what happens. But, again, iPhone is dominating the market. You can't deny that. And, John, we have one quick thing that if you for any of our gaming fans out there, they might be interested to hear about this, right?
You got that right. And yeah, like we just wanted to mention, for anyone who's into gaming, especially us Mac users, Valve, a real big gaming company, has introduced their digital distribution platform, Steam, for the Mac, which is great. It's been on PC since 2004, and it's finally coming to the Mac. I can honestly say, I downloaded it, I love it. Great thing is, for either Mac or PC, you can download a free game right now called Portal, which is actually really fun. So if you want to check it out, go steampower.com, Mac or PC. It's
cool. This is for both you guys, so.
Mm-hmm, got that right.
All right.
Yay. So we got about 4 minutes left in this show. Am I right, Quas?
You are 100% right, Ashley, this time.
Oh, well, we got about 3 minutes, so we might as well mention one real quick thing. I'd like to say that we have gone from 18 live and 261 archive listeners to, drum roll, please, six listeners, which is kind of divided by three, but, hey, that's what you get when you're on break for a little bit. There shall be many more in the archive. You got that right.
Yes. That's 6 plus, and not to keep in mind, Amanda Condon was our last guest. So.
Who doesn't love Amanda Condon? She was great.
Yeah, she was a wonderful guest. And definitely
awesome.
An insight from her. Our show's come to an end, as John just mentioned. People know that episode 55 will be sometime in the near future. So please stay tuned to our Twitter pages and Facebook pages. We actually have 66 Facebook fans now. It's not a good number to have.
That's a great
number. But hopefully someone will become number 67 soon so we can get rid of that ugly number.
Most certainly. So, yeah, remember, if you want to become number 67, Facebook.com/System Showdown, Twitter.com/Showdown. Don't forget, guys.
Yep, and...
Yeah, thanks to Jim Darapool and our listeners, I'm John the iMac Guy.
And I'm Quasim CC, guys. We will see you next time right here on Showdown. Let's go, Windows.
Bye. Showdown.